you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to another episode of Dubs Talk presented by Wendy's. Get the breakfast you deserve with Wendy's 2 for $4, 2 fresh-made sandwiches just for $4. Price and participation may vary. I'm Grant Liffin. That is Kendra Andrews. And boy, oh boy, do we have an episode for you, including coming up a recording of an interview I did with, you know, someone, what's his name? Joe Lacob. Yes. Owner of the Golden State Warriors. We get a chance to chat with him. Interesting stuff in there. I'm not gonna give away too much, but I think you're gonna like this one. But before we get to any of that, Kendra, did anything significant happen last night that we should talk about?
Maybe. I mean, you know, Steph Curry, that dude, good 3-point shot. Don't know him, haven't heard of him. Well, last night he passed Reggie Miller to be now the standalone number 2 on the all-time 3-point list. Now just behind Ray Allen. At the rate at which he shoots 3, it's going to take him about 100 games to surpass Mr. Allen. So probably won't be until next season that we see that happen. But I mean, great for Steph. I think he's obviously changed the way this game is played in terms of long distance shooting. And it was a good moment for him last night.
Yeah, and you asked him a question last night in the post-game presser, and you were asking about did he ever think he would change the game? What was his answer like for that?
He said that he didn't. He said when he first came into this league, he never really thought about the fact that his shooting ability would change the way that this game is played. However, he said that he was very fortunate in his upbringing that he was able to see the work behind the scenes that goes into changing the game. Obviously, his father, Dell, played in the league and he was surrounded by NBA players growing up. So he knew if he wanted to have any sort of impact, whether that was changing the way people approach the game, whether that was being number 2 on the all-time 3-point made list, a lot of work has to go into it. So he said that he just hopes that people, kids, people coming up in this game, see how much work he and others like him put into it. And that's what's really important. Whatever you want your skill set to be, 3 points, passing, dunking, if you want to be successful, you have to put the work in.
Yeah. And that's the work ethic is one thing that everyone talks about with him, right? That's one thing that he's always put in. I remember him, KD, Clay, like everyone just being like, wow, the amount of time they spend in the gym just working on their game is just phenomenal, and see how good they are because of the work they put in. I used to put in the same amount of work, Kendra, and that's why it's so shocking. Not only did I not make the NBA, that I didn't also set records for 3 points. So I don't know. There's something here that we need to figure out because it's not adding up.
You're not doing something.
Right. It's really something I'm not doing right. And it's, you know, I was thinking it might be everything. Yeah.
I think my downfall is, you know, athletes go on these pretty strict diets. I just ate a chocolate croissant for breakfast this morning and like 2 cups of coffee. Like, I just don't think I could give up that food. I plan on eating a burrito later today from La Taqueria in San Francisco. If you haven't been there, go there.
Wow.
That's
classic. I love La Taqueria. Do you know it's voted like the best Mexican food like in the country?
I do. I live really close by it. My mother, actually, she grew up in San Francisco. She went there after her high school graduation. And my grandfather ate 2 burritos that day. So obviously my entire family, it runs in the family that none of us would be able to
give that up. It is so good. It is so good. Hey, speaking of so good, also, why don't we just hear the sound of Steph Curry breaking the record? Take a listen.
Steph will use that Wiseman screen. Gobert's there to make sure he doesn't finish. Curry is now second all time.
There he goes.
The 2,561. And trails only Ray Allen in NBA history.
Yeah, so he broke Reggie Miller's record. And also, when he tied the record, he held up the 3 and the 1 for 31 for Reggie Miller. He was doing all, he said, Steph Curry even said, like, in warm-ups, he did even the follow-through of Reggie. He's trying to do these subtle Reggie things. We'll see what he does for the Ray Allen stuff. As when you're talking about, it could take him at least 100 games to get there. A lot of it's based on percentages, right? How many games he's going to play, how many shots he's taking, and the percentage he's making it. I want to give some stats here about Steph Curry's three-point percentage, because there are some that say, why is his three-point percentage a little lower than it used to be? I can give some reasons. Like, for instance, the whole other opponent team is on top of him when he's shooting the ball. Maybe that's one small thing. But through 16 games this season, he is shooting 37.8% from three, which is very good, but not Steph Curry standards, which his career average is about 42. In 2017-18, a very good year for the Warriors, he shot 36.9%, so lower than this year, through 21 games that year. And yes, he had a stacked team with him. What happened after that, Kendra? Well, for the next 28 games, he shot over 46% from three, and he finished at 42.3. So he is actually kind of streaky. And I'm not saying he can shoot 46% again, because, again, you had Klay Thompson, you had Kevin Durant, you know, the spacing was a little better for him, but he's a little streaky sometimes. You got to give him some time to develop. And as we saw last night, he was being double team, triple team, and he was still firing away, and he shot 50% from three last night.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, very different rosters, different times in his career, just very different circumstances from when he was shooting, you know, above 40% from three. And especially this season, there's clearly a lot to figure out, which we'll get to in a couple moments. But I think it's just encouraged. He will never not shoot the ball, you know, even if there's three defenders on top of him, even if he hasn't hit a three-pointer that night, he will continue to shoot, which I think is another reason. Sometimes that three-point percentage is lower because he doesn't care if there's no, you know, the shot clock is expiring and he's at half court, because we know that he knows that he can make it. He's not afraid to chuck it up. If he misses it, he's not afraid of what it will do to that 3-point percentage. So sometimes you kind of have to look at it and take it with a little bit of a grain of salt to say, you know, sometimes he is just chucking them up, right, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for him, but it will make that 3-point percentage a little bit lower than maybe if he only took good shots.
Right. Yeah. I mean, anything's kind of a good shot for him. And it's amazing, these end of shot clock, I've never seen someone so accurate with these full court thing. Even if he's not making it, it's always around there. And Okay, two things. If I became NBA commissioner, number one, I would fine players for not shooting the ball when the time's expiring, When you're losing a game or winning a game. Do you want to win or not? I don't care what your percentage is. Shoot the ball. If you make it 1 out of 100 times, that one time, that's going to help your team win. So that's commissioner. You get fined if you do not shoot that ball and you try to save your percentage. On the flip side, as commissioner, I can help people by saying, if you shoot the ball at the end of shot clock, and I don't know how to figure this out, it doesn't count against your 3-point percentage. So someone like Steph Curry isn't penalized for shooting that every single time. If you make it, sure, that goes to your percentage. If you don't, that's fine. So maybe it's like past half court or something that doesn't count.
Yeah.
That's just,
and then,
like,
and then after like the 2 second mark on the clock, something like that.
Two commissioner seconds, half court.
Is that the new goal? Commissioner Lifman.
Yeah. As commissioner, I say. Okay. So we mentioned spacing.
Yes.
Ooh, this is a hot topic about lineups. So before the game, Steve Kerr, much to the chagrin of the Warriors fans, goes, I don't see myself changing the starting lineup anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Then this game happens and the starting lineup struggles again. I don't know how to numerically put this besides they were losing 0-14. And it was just another bad start for them. You can't recover from that. So the game happens and the same question is asked again, and listen to how Steve Kerr responds to this one.
There's a lot that goes into all that. You know, we see all the numbers and all the combinations, and there's plenty of theories that we could talk about, but you know, I'm going to leave that for you guys to assess and figure out. We talk about everything internally, obviously, as a coaching staff, and we're well aware of combinations that are working that aren't, well aware of Steph's usage rate. So, you know, as I've said to you guys, it's going to take us 20 games to figure out where we really want to be with our rotation. And we're at 16 now, and I think we're getting a pretty good look at everything. And you know, we've just had two bad losses in a row. We've got to assess everything, no doubt.
Okay, Kendra. Sounds a little different. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Steve, I don't know how many times I've brought this up or other people brought this up. Steve Kerr said at the beginning of the season, give me 20 games to figure it out. 20 games for the team to figure it out. That game was the 16th game. So we're approaching that 20 game mark, and a lot of things still have to be figured out. As Steve Kerr said, it's time to assess everything. And no, the starters should not be exempt from those adjustments. You know, Steve Kerr said that continuity is one thing that this team does not have, that they need to have in order to be successful, which, yes, it is very important. However, you don't want to build off of something that is bad just because it's going to give you continuity. You know, that's because then you'll just be continuously bad. So I definitely do think that it is time for adjustments to be made. That does not mean at all that the entire starting lineup needs to change. Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins should remain in that starting lineup. However, when it comes to, you know, the center spot and the shooting guard spot, it is time to start switching things around, trying new guys. The last time that we talked to Grant, you mentioned that even just putting Kevon Looney in the starting lineup completely changed the dynamic of those five players. Maybe you just start with that change and leave Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup. Maybe you take out Oubre and Wiseman and you stick someone like Damian Lee in that spot. But it is getting to that point where you do have to start making adjustments, because what you've done so far isn't working.
Yeah, it's like, I'll put it this way. Now you say, don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Yes.
What if it is broke?
Right.
You know, and so I've been preaching on this pod for this whole season so far, before you joined, that I've been saying over and over again, be patient. Let's wait this out. Steve Kerr said he's going to take care of stuff for a little while, 20 games or whatever. And I said, patience, patience, patience. My patience has kind of worn up at this point. We're entering game 17. I feel like I'd hope the coaching staff is also feeling the same way, because they want to win. They're not, there's some belief that somehow they're doing something behind the scenes to try not to win. No, they want to win. Steve Kerr and the coaching staff really believed that this lineup they were throwing out there, if they had enough time, could figure it out and defensively be good enough to then, you know, carry over and give them some time to become offensively good enough and then be fine. I don't think there was any harm in trying that. They're 8-8. They're right in the thick of things. They're fine. Here's the issue. Defensively, they haven't been good. They've actually been really bad. Offensively, it's been even worse. So it's not working, right? So you need to figure out what you can change. These next two games coming up are the perfect time to try something new, because you're playing the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are the worst team in basketball right now, right? So why not try something new, give it some time to work, give them some confidence, and then go into playing the Suns. But Kendra, here's the thing. If you keep the same starting lineup, there's a good chance they're going to play well against the Timberwolves. And then you'll have this false confidence that goes, oh, wow, I told you. And then they're going to go into the Suns and fall behind a big deficit. So in my opinion, you change it now.
Yeah, especially because they're playing two consecutive games against the Timberwolves. So there's an opportunity to, you have two games to make adjustments, not only with your approach to your own team, but how you play against that Timberwolves team. We saw earlier in the season when they played two consecutive games against the Blazers, didn't go well the first time, made those key adjustments, went really well for them the second time. But it's a good opportunity to play with things against the same team. I completely agree with you that could give them that false sense of confidence because you are playing the same bad team two times in a row, but it could present a really good opportunity to start tinkering because you are playing that same team. You don't have to think about, okay, then the next matchup, hopefully just see if a new starting lineup can remotely work together. And then once you go into the Suns, that's when you kind of use that real critical eye, critical thinking against a much better team that's playing really well right now.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement in that way. And before we get to the Joe Lacob interview, just in terms of what I and you think they should do next game, you could just put Looney in the starting lineup, right? And let's not pretend that there aren't, not politics, but also behind the scenes stuff at play here. You know, you have to make sure head space is right. You don't want to mess with Oubre's head or Wiseman's head. He's a 19-year-old rookie. You need to make sure. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not as simple as plug and play, right? But for instance, if we're ignoring that for a second here, you could put Looney in and that lineup should be better automatically, right? Defensively, really good, etc. What then happens also is you're putting Wiseman in different lineups in the future, which maybe with the other guys he doesn't mesh as well with, potentially. If you take Oubre and Wiseman out, then you start going, well, those two would be playing again together in other lineups, and that seems like the issue is those two plus other guys playing together, so that didn't really work. So you have to think about all these dynamics. In my personal opinion, I would love to see, and I've, you know, this has been a constant thing people have talked about for a while. I would love to see the Curry, Lee, Wiggins, Draymond, Wiseman lineup. Mm-hmm. Do I think with Looney in that lineup, they'd be probably their best? Absolutely. I really do. But I have to think of the lineups after that and mix and match, right? And you can't just solely focus on one single lineup. Say, I'm going to play everything really well here and then be like, I'll just give up the rest of the game. You need to mix and match.
Exactly. And I think I mentioned this before. It's from what I've heard from other, from coaches and stuff, is the starting five isn't always just your five best players. It's what are the five players that are going to complement each other and will allow for that second unit to also really complement each other. We've seen that Kelly Oubre can be successful playing with that second unit. So that would be a good starting spot to, you know, make these adjustments. We've seen that he can be successful. So what does that look like from the tip and not somewhere later in the first quarter or the start of the second quarter?
Yep. Well, we'll see. We'll be back on this pod and we'll be like, told you, or boy, were we wrong. That's the joy of doing these a few times a week. We get to always say, and by the way, just so you know, I know you're new to this. I would say 80% of the time I'm wrong. Yeah. Okay. But that means 20% of the time I look really good.
Yeah. Good to know. Well, I mean, you do remember what happened when I made my first, before I even joined NBC, I texted you a prediction. I forget what I predicted a buzzer beater.
Yeah.
Win. I forget what game, but it's exactly what happened. So I'm 1-1 with my predictions regarding.
It was really incredible, actually.
So far. So yeah.
I predict that you're going to have an amazing time at La Taqueria today. That's my prediction.
I think that is a good bet.
80% positive on that one. All right. Everyone, it is time for a interview with the owner of the Golden State Warriors, Joe Lacob. I hope you enjoy it. And, you know, again, as always, let us know your feedback and please enjoy.
Are you faithful to the Bay? 49ers 2021 season tickets are available now and locations are filling up quickly. Lock in your seats today to secure your spot for next season. For more information, visit 49ers.com/season tickets.
Today, joining us on Dubs Talk is, I mean, a very special guest, co-executive chairman and CEO of the Golden State Warriors, Joe Lacob. And Joe, thanks for joining.
Of course. It's not like I have anywhere else to go during the day. shelter in place still.
Yeah, yeah. No, we just sit home and we just Zoom. We do this all the time. It's just now we're recording it for everybody. You know, that's
yeah, for posterity.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I guess one of the main reasons we're having you here, I mean, besides just being excited to have, it's been a decade, almost a decade, since you bought the Warriors. And July 15th, 2010, the news broke that you're going to purchase the Warriors with Peter Guber. When I say a decade, what does that feel? Does it feel like it went super fast? Do you go, wow? I mean, it feels like a decade.
Feels, in some ways, feels like a decade, a long time. But mostly, it feels like it went very fast. Like, just like that. 10 years, unbelievably fast. Lot of fun, lot of work, but really tremendous overall experience that, you know, I wouldn't have given up for the world. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I've enjoyed working with Peter. I've enjoyed working with, you know, our management team and enjoyed working with our other co-investor owners, the fans. I mean, it's been a great, great experience.
So when you bought the team, you obviously had to weigh the pros and cons. You set your expectations for what's, you know, the build going to be like. To this is a bottom dwelling team when you took over the reins. What has blown away your expectations the most from when you bought the team?
You know, people ask me that all the time, and I have to say there are a few things that were surprising. One is how much work it all. People, you know, who read about this think, oh, well, you know, we're just sitting around. I'm just sitting around, you know, watching people do stuff. It's not that simple. There's a lot of work in involved, particularly here. We had to turn around the basketball team, obviously, in the early years. We had to turn around a business in the early years as well. So it was a double job. It was like having two jobs. And then on top of that, we wound up building an arena. That was a long-term project. It took really 7 years of work. So it's been a very, very busy experience overall. And then, of course, just when I thought I could relax a little bit, just a little bit, we had all these injuries. You know, Durant left, and, you know, the injury to Clay, obviously, and then Steph last year. And on top of that, COVID. So it's been an incredibly busy year, obviously, for all of us, and me in particular, with respect to, you know, our business and how we're going to stay in business and how we're going to work with the league and get all these things resolved and deal with COVID. So it's been, you know, it's been an incredible amount of work. It went very quickly, but, you know, on the other hand, it's very rewarding. I'm not complaining. I love it. I enjoy it. I love challenges. And obviously the one thing about sports I always say, which I really love, is that you get results all the time, like every night, like even last night, you know, and it's incredibly draining from an emotional standpoint because you have these ups and downs, but you do get results. And sometimes in life, people work for years and don't have results. And it's very frustrating. In my old job, that's the way it was. In venture capital, in healthcare, I'd have to wait for the FDA for years to approve something or not. And the great thing about this is we get results. So I it's been a great experience.
Yeah, I mean, in a results-based business, you know, it comes with the great and the bad, right? And luckily, and not just luckily, just the work you guys put in, you made this into a very good result with this organization. So that's obviously much better than it could have gone. And you mentioned Kevin Durant. When he left, when Andre Iguodala was traded away to when you were revamping the team, you mentioned that, you know, you said the word statue. You said jerseys retired. Right now, do you have a list in your head of the guys that, you know, either statues or jerseys retired for when they do retire?
Oh, sure. Clearly, with the great achievements that the team of, you know, with the core of Curry and Draymond and Clay and Kevin for 3 years, it wasn't as long as those guys, but those guys and even Andre Iguodala. I'd say those five guys certainly deserve some sort of ultimate long-term recognition. And once they retire, I'm sure they'll be appropriately honored.
So in terms of retirement, hopefully for Steph, Clay, and Draymond, it doesn't come anytime soon, of course. But when the day does come and they decide that they're going to hang it up and they tell you, you know, it's the end of the line for them, What do you say to these guys? How do you look back and reflect with those three players?
Well, you know, we're in the middle of it now, so it's hard to really answer that question. But it's been a great, you know, we have something very different here. Something I really love. We have continuity. Continuity is important for sports. Very few teams have it. Steph Curry is the longest tenured player on any team in the NBA. Think about that for a second. Any player. And, you know, Draymond's got a lot of continuity there, and Clay. And, you know, we believe in continuity to the extent possible. If things don't work, obviously you have to make changes. But we believe in that continuity, and we think it helps us. And so I think we've gotten to know each other pretty well over the years. And, you know, you have to be careful as a governor, owner, whatever you want to call it, not to get too close to your players, because the truth is sometimes things are necessary to make moves. And no one really wants to do that when you become close to someone. So can't get too close. And yet, you know, when you're together with people for this long, you do get close. And so it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to want to follow up with you on that one. But I did hear you mention, you know, how long Steph has been with the franchise. And how important is it for you to keep him with the franchise for his career? Because you look back at the legacies of Kobe Bryant, Dirk Nowitzki, Tim Duncan, you know, these cornerstone. Right, I've got the dog here.
And you know who that is.
Which pup is this?
This is Larry. In the lottery. Larry, yes, was in the lottery for a little while. Sorry. He likes being on my lap.
Hey, he's a lot.
When we're talking basketball, he wants to be involved.
Oh, I mean, it would make only sense if when you have a Larry O'Brien sitting on your lap right there. So for Steph, you know, we got a contract situation coming up soon, but how important is it for you to keep Steph Curry a Golden State Warrior for his whole career?
Well, I would say this, it's up to him and us. Both has to be a two-way street. And, you know, I have every expectation that will be the case. I certainly hope, I think he hopes that he'll be with us forever. It's pretty unique in this day and age to be with one team for your entire career. But, you know, there's no guarantees in life, right? I mean, I don't know what Steph's going to decide at some point. And it's up to him. He's earned the right. You know, I say that all the time about these guys. Kevin left. I'm not mad at Kevin. He earned the right to be a free agent. And if we're not a place he wants to be or someone wants to be, then they have the right to go somewhere. But, you know, we also have the right to do what's best for our fans and fandom and so on, and try to have the best team. And players do get, when they're young, they get better or worse, but they usually get better. And then when they get older, you know, sometimes they start to decline. So we all have to look at all those things, and there's contracts, and it is a business. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, we will come to an accommodation with Steph to keep him here for a long time. But people need to understand, it's always, even Joe Montana didn't stay the 49ers forever. It just worked out that way. And it's unfortunate. We all would have liked to have seen the opposite. But so you can't guarantee these things, but that is the expectation and the goal.
And part of it for you, I'm sure, is that when you build a franchise, right, to accommodate superstars that want to win, that are competitive, that are looking to always stay on top, right? So if you went through a rebuilding phase, for instance, that might not fit with what Steph Curry would want. Now, Steph Curry being on any team probably stops you from being in the rebuilding phase completely. You're probably going to be pretty good either way. But does that play into it? I know you're a competitive guy. You want to win. But does that play into it about keeping your stars happy by having a team that wants to win all the time?
Well, to be frank, it's very important to us and to me, not just our players. We're the ones who are going to be here forever.
Right.
So we want to win, period. End of story. And we're going to do anything it takes. I think we've demonstrated that to make sure that we do. And so we have to make the right decisions to be able to do that. And it's very complicated. Salaries and percentage, the salary that it takes up as a percentage of our entire cap. You know, you have to be able to build a team around the great players too. So it is a very complicated job that, you know, it's Bob Myers' job to figure that out. And then we all get together and talk about it.
You mentioned Joe Montana just a second ago. Let's, you know, in the places of history, when we look back on Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, you know, where do these guys sit in the pantheon of Bay Area sports? You're a Bay Area guy.
Yes. Well, look, what these guys, this group achieved over a, you know, call it 5 years straight, 7 years, whatever, was remarkable. It's really never been done. Five straight finals. The Celtics in the 60s, you have to go back to then. That was a very different league to even see anything like it. So I don't care if you're in the Bay Area or anywhere. It's an incredible achievement to have that kind of longevity of being excellent. And so it's a great achievement. They're up there with some of the great, I would say, 49ers. They've had so many great years. They've strung together under Montana and then Steve Young. So we feel like these guys have earned an incredible amount of respect from us and from the Bay Area sports community.
Yeah, I guess when you look at it, the Bay Area has been blessed with, in each sport, some would argue, like a top 10 player in every sport at some point. Willie Mays, Barry Bonds, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Steph Curry, you know, Kevin Durant. It's really cool when you look back at that. You mentioned your communication with these players, the relationships you form with a Steph, a Clay, or Draymond. Do you remember the first times like you started interacting with these guys early on? What were some impressions? Do you have like any funny stories about any of these guys early on?
Oh, there is a lot of them. you know, the funniest stories always happen to be about Clay, as you might imagine. But, you know, I specifically can recall even today, the very first year he was on the team. And I think we're in Sacramento. I remember being in Sacramento. And, you know, he was not, people don't remember when we started out, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn for a little while. It was a tough beginning. And I remember everyone saying, you know, oh, wow, don't play this guy. He can't shoot. And I think he didn't talk. Like, you know, there was no way to really communicate with him because he never said a word. There were so many funny stories about the communication was so difficult, and to watch him evolve over the years and see not only how consistently great he's been in shooting the ball and obviously playing defense as well, but just communicate, his ability to communicate is so great compared to what it used to be. So there's so many great stories. You know, it's hard to remember anyone in particular now, but with Clay that really ring true, really funny. And then Draymond, you know, I can remember specific moments too, when you knew he was going to change everything. I don't know if you remember the game back in Miami early on, when he could see things on the floor that others couldn't see. And that's the game I remember that really stands out. And sorry, I've got a phone going off here, but there's a lot of stories about these guys. I remember Steph in particular. For me, it's a more personal kind of thing. He probably, I don't know if he'll remember this or cop to it, but the very first time I invited Steph to play golf was at Pebble Beach. And I played Steph and we actually, you know, I'm competitive, so he's clearly better than me, but we actually kept score that day, one mano a mano kind of thing. And I beat him straight up, gross. And I will never forget it. But it was on the 18th hole. I think he hit a ball into the ocean, if I recall. Anyway, I shot, if I remember, 78 and he shot 79. I have never beat him since then. And probably not even close, to be honest. I mean, clearly that was a misnomer, but I that's what I remember about Steph, is that first time. And we've played multiple times since then. We don't talk about it. Steph is not that kind of guy to talk like that, but I remember that.
We got to get that scorecard framed or something, you know?
I don't have it. I'm sure I don't have it, but I'll never forget it.
Is there anyone in the organization that can beat Steph? Like, not, I mean, consistently, but in a round of golf?
No, no. He's a very good player. You know, it's tough when you play against the pros, as you've seen when he's gone and played these events. That's a whole nother level. But I am convinced that if Steph in high school had focused on golf as opposed to basketball, I'll bet you he'd be a pro today. He'd be a pro because his hand-eye coordination and the way he works at his craft is just so what separates him, I think, so much from other players. And I bet you that if he were playing golf, he's got the athletic ability. It just would have been the practice and the perseverance. And I think he would have been able to do that.
Yeah, that's a testament to just how incredibly coordinated he is to be able to do that. Cause that is just basketball versus golf, and being able to potentially be a pro in both is just incredible. But use just in terms of communicating? Do you talk to the players a good amount at this point? I know you said you try to separate that a little bit in the past, but do you communicate often with these guys?
I do. I not a lot. It's not like I call them after a game or or in between games. I mean, that does happen occasionally. You know, mostly with like a Draymond. Draymond and I kind of, you know, we hit it off all that. We kind of see eye to eye a lot. And it's very easy for me to communicate and be very direct with him. But not really. I leave that job to, that's really Bob's job and Kirk and those guys. And, you know, I don't want to get, I mean, I'm involved in the sense that I know everything that's going on and I am up to date on everything, but I don't really feel that's my job to maintain those daily kind of conversations. And nor do they probably want to talk to the owner of the team on a daily basis and hear what he's thinking. I just don't think they want to hear that. And I don't blame them.
Is Draymond pretty, you said you're pretty direct and everything. Is Draymond pretty direct and straightforward with you as well?
Yes. He's very direct. He's very analytical, actually. He's a, you know, Draymond probably will end up, if he wants to, could be a coach someday. Maybe it could be in general manager, who knows? I mean, could be a broadcaster. I mean, Draymond's got, you know, a variety of skill sets, and I think he has the capability to do that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So, you know, when you look back and the relationships with Bob and Steve with the players, I want to dive into that for a second. But when you look back at your decade with the Warriors ownership, where do you rank the hiring of Steve Kerr in terms of your decisions you've made as an owner?
Well, there have been a lot of important decisions, more than people realize, and some that aren't obvious to everybody, more than I would have suspected, frankly. Over the 10 years, you get involved in so many things that turn out to be pretty darn important, and it's pretty surprising. But I would say, obviously, your hiring decisions are paramount. And he's right up there with Rick Welts and Bob Myers. I mean, you know, right. I mean, I hope I don't forget anybody, but those three, you know, are very, very key hires for the organization that kind of changed, altered, if you will, our trajectory long-term. Steve was a tremendous hire. He's an incredibly gifted coach, very smart. And, you know, he was obviously very important. He let us go from where we had gone under Mark Jackson and go to another level in terms of taking the talent that we had and what we developed and drafted to that level. So I think he was a very, very important hire. I can't say the most important because, you know, on the business side, Rick Welts was incredibly important to this organization in so many ways that, you know, maybe the average basketball fan doesn't understand. And certainly Bob Myers, I think everyone understands also, was a great hire. And all of them were, well, Rick wasn't a risky one. Rick was pretty much a known commodity.
Right.
Bob and Steve, you know, one had not been a coach and one had not been a president of basketball operations. So, you know, we were banking on those people developing and learning going forward and becoming who they are today. And fortunately, made the right decisions.
So, yeah, and, you know, the culture that we talk about with your organization all the time, players are happy playing within the Warrior system, right? The joy that has been talked about before. How do Bob and Steve create that culture and forge those relationships with players?
Well, they are both really nice people. I mean, it's the truth. Steve is a great culture guy in so many ways. He sees every player on the roster and maybe even relates to those, you know, guys in the 10 through 15 spots on the roster more because he was not, maybe not 10 to 15, but he was certainly not a starter. So I think he relates very well. He communicates to most players very well, not all. I mean, you know, nobody can be a perfect communicator to all types, But I think he's just a great overall communicator, and the culture that he's established with the team, I think, is just truly outstanding. And Bob Myers, equally so. Bob is can be tough, just like Steve can be tough, but they also have a very soft hand. They really they know how to, you know, try to get the most out of people, and to I wouldn't say be friends with the players, but to understand, empathize, sympathize, all that. So they do a good job of that.
Yeah, it seems like a mutual respect thing that kind of happens. And we've heard countless stories and seen it sometimes happen in public between Draymond and Steve. And they always talk about the relationship, how the mutual respect is there, of course. And that allows them to, they're both highly competitive people, right? And they clash at times. For you personally, you also have described yourself as a very highly competitive person, right? And have you ever clashed with Steve at times as well in that way?
You want me to reveal some of my secrets here? That won't go well if I, because everyone loves Steve, Bob. Yes, certainly. I have clashed with Steve. I think it would be foolish to say otherwise. But they're good, healthy discussions is what I would describe them as. And look, I believe in an organization, for an organization to be successful, people have to have the right to voice their opinion. And not only the right, they have the requirement in this organization to voice their opinion. And Steve is a very strong-willed individual, has a very strong set of opinions. That's good. Just like it is with, we want your scouts to have a strong set of opinions. You have to do that. You have to do that throughout your organization, because you have to encourage discourse. And ultimately, we all emerge on the same side together and you know, try to make things happen as a unit together. But it's good to have alternate opinions. So Steve and I have differed on various things I'm not going to get into today, but over the years. But it's nothing that, it's all good. It's all good at the end of the day, is the bottom line. Because you know, obviously work these things out. And I think overall, we have a very healthy relationship.
Okay, so I'm not going to sound the alarms right now. Just send everyone into a, no, I'm just kidding. No, that it seems like one thing that we've heard about your organization in the past is, especially in like the draft room and the war room, you welcome somebody, a naysayer, somebody to say, no, I don't agree. So you can have that conversation. And it seems like that's been a healthy conversation for a lot of the big drafts that you've had, including James Wiseman. But it does seem like for Wiseman, it was almost not necessarily a consensus, but it seemed like you guys were very high on him. And at this point, starting to look like you guys are onto something.
That situation was very different than all the other drafts. Because of COVID, we had a very high pick, obviously. We'd never had that before. We got to go and visit these players. They couldn't come to us. Very unusual. So we had to go visit them, and we could only have a total of four people go and visit. So the group wound up being the same four people for all of the visits. Wound up being Bob, Steve, myself, and our head trainer. So we wound up doing all those. And, you know, at the end of the day, there was total unanimity amongst the three of us in terms of being decision makers from ownership perspective, from basketball operations, from coaching perspectives. About James Wiseman. I mean, we all really, really liked him. I think he was the number one choice. It's fair to say for all three of us. We all compile our own draft boards, everybody. And there were differences in the organization, I will tell you, as you would expect. But it just so happens, I think the three of us all had the same view on James Wiseman, which is that we all thought he was the number one prospect in the draft.
I mean, that's a pretty intimidating group to show up at your door if you're a young 19-year-old, you know? Do you ever think about that, that you guys rolling in there? It's not your normal situation.
But, you know, that's I've told the story already. James, when we went to visit him, we got to do a dinner with him after the workout. And unlike anybody else, he came to that dinner himself. He did not bring along any of his handlers. you know, everyone has those, whether it be, you know, their advisors or whatever, or family. No, he's the only one that came by himself. So that's pretty interesting, and handled himself really maturely, as far as much mature as you can be for a 19-year-old. That was impressive to us. that was impressive to us.
Do you guys play like good cop, bad cop? Does it naturally come out? Is somebody like the more?
Yes.
Does happen. You come in strong. Are you the intimidator? And then
no, not always. But depending on the situation, perhaps yes.
Quickly, I gotta ask you this. I know you've been asked multiple times about this before. How often do people still come up to you about the light years comment? Does that still happen?
The light years comment. Yes, every now and then. mostly, it's people saying things like, hey, that light years comment, I guess you were right. You know, something like that, which I just laugh about. You know, as I've said before, it really wasn't intended. The way it came out, it was sort of meant to be a private conversation, private comment. I was trying to make a point, but I did say it. I'm not going to deny it. And, you know, look, we're a confident group and we pride ourselves on trying to get ahead of the curve, whether it be about basketball or whether it be about the business side of the organization, or could be anything, even lately, the testing of fans, you know, for COVID. You know, we're kind of out there further than any other. Even today, we may be the only arena sports venue in the world that tests every single person. We don't have fans. I hope we do soon. But that tests every single person in that building. We're extremely aggressive. No one gets into that building. I don't care if an employee or a media member or, you know, operations person or player, you have to be tested. And if we were to have fans like they do in Houston or Orlando or some of these other places where they do have to maybe 3,000 fans currently, you know, they have different rules in those states, perhaps. And maybe that's partially responsible for what I'm about to say, but we'd be testing everybody. We'd be very, very aggressive. So you can call it light years, you can call it whatever you want. I'm just saying it's our job to push boundaries, to be aggressive, to try to be the very, very best we can be. And, you know, to some extent, we're going to be what could be perceived as to be, you know, on the edge sometimes. And that's okay.
I mean, the light years comment, I know it all in good fun, but at the same time, I mean, it would look bad if things went badly after you.
Very bad. It would look very bad.
You know, and Warriors fans, to their credit, just have a good time with it. You know, they actually adopted it. It was almost like the We Believe era and then the light years era.
That makes me laugh. Yeah. Well, look, it is what it is. You know, one of the things I've learned in this job, you asked me early on in the conversation, what surprised you the most? And look, this is a hard job. Being in my position or ownership of a sports team, this day and age is probably harder than it was 20 years ago even. You know, you've got all of the social media and every single thing you do or say can be misinterpreted or misconstrued or correctly construed. But it's just every little thing you say gets interpreted. So you have to be very, very careful. And, you know, I've made a few mistakes over the years. I've learned that if you're going to make a comment, whatever you say, you better be prepared for it to be turned around in another way. So the light years thing is an example of that. I really didn't mean it in that context or to be out there, but it got turned into it. And there have been other instances where, you know, I've made a few mistakes too. Look, we all learn. It's a hard job to do. And I just try to, I don't want to sit here and say I want to be non-controversial and boring all the time either. So, you know, we have a job to do, and sometimes things are going to get interpreted different ways.
I mean, you've done a good job of staying off social media. That's one place. Don't go there if you don't have
to. Everyone has their own view about that. There are many times, I can assure you, that I have so badly wanted to push them, you know, with a tweet or something like that. But I've never done it. In 10 years, I have never tweeted once. And I do follow social media extensively, actually, which can be very harmful to your health, your mental health. but I don't really participate very much, because if at all, because I just think it's confusing and difficult, and the job's hard enough as it is. And my attitude is, you know, people are, let them all comment, and people have a right to have opinions, and that's just the way the world is. And I don't want to make it any worse.
I have just one final question for you so I can let you go. And I know you're quite busy. When we look back, three titles. I mean, it's hard to rank best to last or whatever, but do you have, if you're going to order in favorites, can you do that?
Well, I feel very fortunate to even be asked this question, which means we won three titles. You know, the first one probably would take precedence or priority because it was so, you know, meaningful, such an achievement from where we came from and from where this organization and franchise had been in the prior 40 years. So I have to say that one, but all of them were special in their own way and different in their own way. But more than, you know, this is, you'll hear people talk about this all the time. The thing that really sticks out, unfortunately, is not the three that we won. It's the two that we didn't win, where we went to the finals. Those are the ones that are hard to live with and you remember so vividly. It's difficult to, you know, to look back in 2016 and realize you had won 73 games and you were up 3-1 in the finals. And Draymond Green gets a suspension for something I don't think he should have been suspended for. That's a difficult one to live with. It bothers me. I feel like we really should have won that year. Now, others will talk about 2015 and say the Cavaliers were injured. Well, there's always injuries, that's true. And then the last one really hurt. I felt we should have been the champions in the fifth one, but you know, it's life. We had unbelievably devastating injuries in the finals to Kevin and then to Clay. I think we had a good chance to win that one too. So I look at those two probably. I think about those two more almost than the three wins because I feel like I'm not trying to be greedy, but and I understand that those things happen, but it's hard because it's such a thin line between winning and losing a title.
Yeah, no, it was such an incredible stretch. And I guess we'll never know if you win that one after the 73 win season, if Kevin comes over to the Warriors as well. It's just, you know, how everything, sliding doors almost, right?
Sliding doors. No one really knows the answer to that.
Right.
So it's a very good point.
Yeah. Well, Joe, thank you very much. And I really appreciate you coming on. And it's been a fun 10 years for all of us to watch the Warriors grow and everything on your tenure. So I really appreciate you joining.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and to all our, you know, our fans out there. I know it's been an incredibly difficult year for everybody, not just us. It's a very difficult year for us, obviously, but for everybody out there. And I feel really badly about all the you know, the restaurateurs. That just bothers me so much that they're out of business, and all the people associated with our business that otherwise, you know, would be in business born for this. But we're all going to get through it. The vaccine is hopefully going to start to roll out a little faster. And maybe next year we're back to normal and starting a new decade and some great achievements going forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much again.
All right. Thanks.